Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleichhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schleichhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schleichhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. This episode is a very important one. In fact, it is even more important than many realize. It has to do with our power grid and the new growing threats to it from foreign actors. Now, let's get on to our guest. He is the author of many books and articles on national defense subjects, former Russian arms specialist with the CIA, former chief of staff with the congressionally mandated EMP commission, and is currently the founder and executive director of the EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security. I could only be talking about one man, that is Peter Vincent Pry. Hello, sir. It is a pleasure to welcome you back to Civil Defense Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Preston.
It's always good to hear and read what you produce. But first, I want to do full disclosure that we are associated with each other because I am the Eastern Regional Director of the EMP Task Force under your head. So I just want everybody to know that there is a little bias here on my side, okay?
A bias based on the facts and logic.
That's right. That's right. So you've been putting out a flurry of articles recently, and they all have a lot of modern-day suspense and intrigue and worry about them because of the threats that are posed against us. One of them was blackout warfare, weaponizing weather to attack the U.S. power grid, and then another is how to start an accidental civil war or nuclear war. And that was very enlightening as well. But you have this new book, Blackout Warfare, Attacking U.S. Electrical Power Grid, A Revolution in Military Affairs. And this is something that's not just written by you, but by a team of national security and grid security experts.
Yes, that's right. As the introduction to the book is co-authored by my old boss on the Congressional EMP Commission, Dr. William Graham, who's the free world's foremost expert on EMP. You know, when I was, I was in first grade, Dr. Graham was a young defense scientist who was looking at the aftermath of the Starfish Prime high-altitude nuclear explosion over Johnston Island that knocked the lights out in Hawaii to try to figure out, well, what happened here? So he was on the first team that explored the EMP electromagnetic pulse phenomena in the West, and then spent his professional life trying to protect our military systems. Then it was very deeply classified, you know, against nuclear EMP attack. And later on, I mean, he's a brilliant Albert Einstein level intellect. Later on, he served as President Reagan's White House science advisor and ran NASA. And then for 17 years, I served under him. He was the chairman of the Congressional EMP Commission, and I served as his chief of staff. And he was one of the co-authors. The other co-author on the introduction to the book Blackout Warfare is my friend Jim Woolsey, who was the I worked under him when I was at the CIA, and I was the first person to brief him about EMP. I was the CIA senior analyst, their only expert really on the nuclear EMP phenomena. And I was the lead guy on Soviet and then later on Russian nuclear weapons and strategy, and both of them have written an introduction and have not just kind enough, but are truthfully telling that this is the first book of its kind that has ever been written, where we have, and that's why we wrote it, you know, to warn the West about this new revolution in military affairs that has been invented by Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. It was really put together first by the Russians, by a guy named General Vladimir Slepchenko, in his landmark book, No Contact Wars, that was written more than 20 years ago. And Slepchenko's vision was, you know, because modern societies are so dependent upon electricity, we're basically an electronic civilization, and we can't operate and survive, nor can our military forces operate without electricity. And so you could win a war, you could win World War III very quickly and decisively if you blacked out an adversary's electric grid, because once the electricity goes, you know, within 72 hours, all the other critical infrastructures will collapse. You know, everything depends directly or indirectly on electricity. Mm-hmm. You know, communications, transportation, business and industry, even food and water, you know, depend upon electricity. And that with a single nuclear weapon, or with non-nuclear EMP weapons, which are also described in the book, most people don't know that there are non-nuclear EMP weapons that are available even to terrorists, you know, who with a small number of them could basically black out the U.S. electric grid. And there are many different ways of attacking the grid. You can do it physically. You can do it with cyber warfare. You can do it with non-nuclear EMP weapons. The biggest and best is a nuclear EMP attack. Any one of these ways could collapse the electric grid and all the U.S. critical infrastructures and basically win World War III in less than a day, in 24 hours for an adversary. And now other heroic souls and great national security people have spent professional lifetimes who have contributed to the book. There's a whole bunch of them, but like William Radaski, who is probably after Dr. Graham, he's probably the second greatest EMP expert in the free world. Admiral William Studeman, is a contributor to the book. He ran the National Security Agency, the NSA, the CIA, and Navy intelligence. We've got authors who worked on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. People who are professors, Cindy Ayers, who was worked almost 40 years for the National Security Agency and was a professor at the U.S. Army War College. Another professor who has taught at both West Point and is teaching now at West Point and taught at the Air War College. A real cast of some of our best and brightest cutting edge thinkers from both older generations, the generation that won the Cold War, people like Graham and Jim Woolsey, but also knew the young Turks, as it were, the new generation of people, mm-hmm. the best and brightest that I could find, you know, who have studied this subject and share our deep concern that America basically today is where the free world was, where the West was back in 1938, 1939, when most of our political and military leaders in the West were oblivious to a new way of warfare that had been invented, two new ways of warfare that had been invented by Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan. Mm-hmm. You know, the Germans came up with the Blitzkrieg, you know, the idea of using tanks and air power and mobile infantry and artillery in combination, in coordination. The synergistic effects of the combination of those things made them irresistible, and they basically conquered Western Europe in less than a year, and were ultimately only defeated by the Allies at the cost of if you include the Soviet Union, which you must, at the cost of over 30 million dead, you know, because we had to learn how to fight a better blitzkrieg than they did. Mm-hmm. And then the Imperial Japanese came up with the idea of using carrier-based aviation, you know, to sink battleships. And unfortunately, you know, our cutting-edge, brilliant people, a guy named Captain Billy Mitchell at the time, foresaw this and was ignored and, in fact, court-martialed, you know, for warning the Navy that, look, the wave of the future is not the battleship. It's going to be the aircraft carrier. And you can sink battleships with aircraft carriers, and whoever is dominant in aircraft carriers is going to control the oceans. He foresaw that, and his reward was to be court-martialed. And he died even before he saw the threat envisioned. But fortunately for him, he was listened to by one man, a civilian, a guy named Carl Vinson, who was the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee at the time, and he forced the Navy to build aircraft carriers. That's the only reason we had aircraft carriers at the beginning of World War II. The Navy didn't want them, you know, but Carl Vinson made them build them. And that, by the way, is why we have an aircraft carrier today named Carl Vinson. You know, we honored Mitchell after posthumously during World War II. They named a bomber after him, the Mitchell, the Mitchell bomber, which was used to bomb Tokyo in the Doolittle raid. But we almost lost World War II because we are elites, you know, except for a handful of people like Winston Churchill and his advisors, you know, were warning about these new ways of warfare, that the bad guys were that the next war wasn't going to be like World War I, you know, that they were using technology in ingenious ways, you know, that would be able to overwhelm us if we weren't prepared. And fortunately, we were able to turn back that tide, but at enormous cost. The whole war cost 60 million lives in order for us to prevent the totalitarian powers of Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan from winning. But they nearly did, and we don't want that to happen again. I feel that we're in a, as do all my co-authors, that we're in a similarly perilous situation today, where Washington just can't seem to do anything right, where the people who are in charge of the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, and Department of Energy, are basically self-contented, egotistical bureaucrats who are asleep at the wheel, you know? They think they know everything.
I think that's being polite. Some of them are, I think, actively working against us. It just seems that way. I hate to cast dispersions like that, but, I mean, it just seems that way to me.
Well, I have to tell you, I personally agree with that point of view. In an earlier book I wrote called The Power and the Light, which was, you know, basically the history of the EMP Commission, our 20-year struggle to try to protect the country from EMP, and why we did not succeed, you know, haven't succeeded so far, even though there's a presidential EMP executive order that President Trump signed into law, and President Biden has continued it to his credit, that they're supposed to be giving high priority to working on EMP protection, but it isn't happening within the government. And I share your concerns because, you know, if you're a foreign, you know, when you look at the totalitarian enemies that we face, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, they have been very effective at being able to penetrate the most secure parts of the U.S. government. We've had Russian spies and Chinese spies in our nuclear weapons labs and in the CIA, you know, for something like 20 years, the Cuba managed to put a female agent in charge of the Cuban desk in the Defense Intelligence Agency, 20 years, you know, before she was finally caught. So they're really good at penetrating the most secure parts of the U.S. government. But the agencies that protect the electric grid, the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, isn't even a federal agency. You know, you don't have to go through background investigations or take polygraph tests. You know, nobody is checking on you all the time to make sure you're not a spy. It's really easy to penetrate these EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute, which puts out a lot of propaganda trying to dismiss the EMP and cyber threats. And a lot of, and they are quoted in the press. They have a huge budget so that they can propagandize and spread their propaganda, you know, much more than my EMP task force has. So they get their they are much better funded to get their word out and to mislead the press and to mislead policymakers. And yet almost nobody seems to notice that, you know, it's right in, if you look at who provides their funding, Russia and China provide funding to the Electric Power Research Institute, in addition to something like 30 other foreign powers. You know, clearly, if you're planning on winning World War III by attacking the U.S. electric grid, you're going to want to do everything you can to make sure that the United States doesn't protect its electric grid. And so you're going to try to penetrate our system, spread propaganda around, get people into the right agencies and departments and regulatory institutions to see that it doesn't happen. And so I've written that, I've said that, I fear we are penetrated. That's one of the reasons why we haven't been able to get the government to fulfill its responsibilities here, even though we have two presidents from two different parties, you know, who have who are backing up an executive order that's supposed to give high priority to protecting our electric grids. And we have had laws from Congress. You know, back in 2015, there was a bill passed called the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act by Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, who's a great hero. He led the charge on that. And, you know, that bill alone, you know, in the America I grew up in, oh, and by the way, on a bipartisan basis, in the 2020 National Defense Authorization Act, and I think it's the first time it is, this has ever happened in history, you know, Congress, both parties came together. How often do you hear the parties agreeing on anything?
Not lately.
But in 2020, in the FY National in the National Defense Authorization Act, which funds the Defense Department, it's the arguably it's the most important bill that Congress passes. They basically incorporated President Trump's EMP executive order into the law. And in effect, it was like the Congress stepping up and saying, we agree with this executive order. And you know what? You know, we are ordering you, federal government, to implement this executive order. And we are giving it the weight of law so that you will be breaking the law if you don't implement this order. And we want you to report to us every year on the progress you're making. And, you know, so in the America I grew up in, you know, when we were still a constitutional republic, if the Congress of the United States passed a law ordering the federal government to do something, it would get done. If the president, if the commander in chief issued an executive order, it would get done. Mm-hmm. And if both of them issued laws and executive orders ordering them to do the same thing, for sure it would get done, right?
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, at this point that, well, it's because we all know that what has happened is one of the things the founding fathers feared most, that you know, that we would have this rise of what we call the deep state. You know, they would have called it a new aristocracy, and that's what it is. You know, these bureaucrats in Washington who aren't elected, they answer to no one but to their own departments and agencies. They're a new aristocracy, and they think they know better than presidents and congresses and basically have the power to do nothing if they want to. And this isn't the only area where we can see they're doing nothing. You know, you look at COVID-19, you know, the unpreparedness for COVID, okay, which isn't really a serious biological threat. But anybody who is in civil defense knows that we have spent decades since the 1950s and billions of dollars in supposedly getting ready for biological warfare and against serious biological threats like genetically engineered anthrax or genetically engineered smallpox, bubonic plague. These are serious biological threats, not compared to COVID, which has a, you know, very low, I mean, it's really not no worse than the flu, okay?
Well,
and there's just this hysteria associated with it.
Yeah.
And an intelligent high school student would have known that if you were preparing for biological warfare, well, you need to stockpile surgical masks and ventilators and other kinds of equipment. A more intelligent high school student might have said, well, you know, we've got decades to prepare for future biological threats. Let's harness the supercomputers at the nuclear laboratories to go through all the genetic permutations that could come out of coronatype viruses and come up with hypothetical vaccines, mm-hmm. On paper, so that we could quickly implement these kinds of things. None of that was done. Where is our money gone to? Well, it's gone into the maw of these do-nothing bureaucrats. And who knows, maybe...
And the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, and maybe traders too.
Yeah.
If someone were doing a documentary on this, they could take a helicopter and film, when you ask where did the money go to, and film all the mansions that are out in Potomac, Maryland, and in the Washington, D.C. area. Mm-hmm. That's where the money went. It went to the pockets of Beltway bandits, mm-hmm. and the new aristocracy that basically runs Washington, mm-hmm. That makes, they make fortunes here, And even the average federal employee, we all know, has a better income and more job security than the working stiff who has to pay the taxes to support them. They are literally a new aristocracy. On the point of penetration by, now, to exercise a little, I do have to say this as a footnote, mm-hmm. because if my old boss, Dr. Graham, was involved in this conversation, I used to raise some of these issues with him about, sir, maybe the reason, despite all of our best efforts here, maybe the reason the government isn't implementing the commission recommendations, and defying executive orders, defying the law, is because of penetration by Russia, China, our adversaries, people who have come out of our universities, mm-hmm. who hate the U.S. government and are basically, even if they aren't Russian or Chinese, they are in their minds, mm-hmm. because they've been turned by our educational system, mm-hmm. against the United States. Dr. Graham would always caution me, Peter, and when it comes to Washington, never attribute to a conspiracy that which can be explained by stupidity. and he is right about that, I'm inclined to agree with you, but that's my own gut reaction and instinct. Yeah. And most Americans feel too that, we're being portrayed, but he worked for the U.S. government like three times longer than I did. I've spent a professional lifetime, mm-hmm. yet he spent like the equivalent of three professional lifetimes since 1963, working deeply in the national security area at all these senior levels. And I have to admit, when you meet this new aristocracy, it's just amazing how stupid these people are. Mm. Most of them are really not competent to be doing the job. Take the current White House cyber czar. We have a cyber czar because the EMP commission recommended that we have an EMP czar, okay? And so they did establish a person in the White House who's supposed to be responsible for protecting our critical infrastructure. Instead of calling it an EMP czar, it's called a cyber czar, okay? And in term, the official name is like the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber and Emerging Technologies, but it covers... cyber and EMP. Uh-huh. Who is that person? Well, it's Ann Neuberger. And who is she? She used to read pornographic novels at a bookstore that she owned with her husband, 15 years ago. Then she got a law degree at George Washington University, and she's basically a lawyer. So we have a lawyer in charge, the guy who was in charge of the Critical Infrastructure Security Agency that was stood up, to protect our critical infrastructures. His name is somewhat famous now, his name was Chris Krebs, mm-hmm. okay? He was a lobbyist and lawyer who worked for Microsoft under the Obama administration, and he was put in charge of CISA, and Trump inherited him, didn't fire him, and even though I had tried to get him to fire him for 4 years, mm-hmm. I don't know if any of my pleas to the president actually got through, because the gatekeepers of the White House, they look at everything. That disappointed me, because the president did sign off on the executive order as a personal promise to me. I briefed mm-hmm. him before he became president at the Iowa caucuses. And he said to me, and this is a verbatim, he said, "Don't worry, Dr. Pry. when I'm elected president, I'm going to knock their heads together and we're going to get this problem solved. And that's what the executive order did. It put everybody on the hot seat, the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Energy, all these do-nothing agencies, and required them to work together and report to the president on their progress, you know? Uh-huh. And if you were to talk to them, as I do, the people, there are some good people, I should add. There are some good people who do care about this, but they're usually at pretty low levels, you know? If you talk to their bosses and their bosses' bosses, they'll say, oh, but we are implementing the MP executive order. For example, in the infrastructure bill. If you look at the infrastructure bill, there's $150 million allocated for research and development on EMP protection of the electric grid. Research and development, you know, Department of Defense has known for 50, 60 years how to protect against EMP. You know, we don't need more studies, you know, about how to do it. The EMP Commission in 2008 practically provided a blueprint for how to do it, you know. And this is just more money that's going to go into the pockets of defense contractors and the highly paid bureaucrats at DHS and DOE. Yeah.
Now, you know, Dr. Prine, we're getting kind of short of time here, but I mean, this show needs to be like 4 hours long in order to get all the wisdom that we can glean from you on these topics.
I should have talked more about the book and less about the problems.
That's fine. The book is important. And let me just highlight the chapters that are in the book, and then you can give us a summation of what this is all about. So chapter one is weaponizing the weather. Chapter two, cyber attacking electric power grids. Chapter three, physical security, the electric grid's dirty little secret. Chapter four, non-nuclear EMP attack. Chapter five, high altitude electromagnetic pulse hemp attack. Chapter six is advancing national preparedness against blackout warfare. And then chapter seven is conclusion and commentary. And like you said, you just gave a brief idea of who your co-authors are. There's a number of them that you didn't mention, but they all deserve accolades. And I will put those names in the show notes so everybody is aware. And, you know, we hope that everybody goes out and buys this book, Blackout Warfare, with the link in the show notes as well. So can you give us about 3 minutes worth of why people need to read this book and understand these threats and how these multiple scenarios came about and what makes it so special as far as our revolution in military affairs?
Well, it's the first time such a book has been written that explains how our adversaries, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, they all plan to do it this way, how they plan to attack our electric grid and win World War III without actually having to go to war with the U.S. Marines or the U.S. Navy. You know, 99% of the electricity in our military bases comes from the civilian grid. So they would have to fight World War III with just 1% of their electricity, which they can't do. And the American people depend upon the grid for their survival. If we had a blackout that lasted a year, the EMP Commission calculates that up to 90% of the population would die from starvation, disease, and societal collapse. And so a U.S. president confronted with losing Taiwan, if China decided to attack Taiwan, or Russia decided to attack NATO, or North Korea to attack South Korea, a U.S. president would have to choose between using what's left of our military assets to try to recover our electric grid and save the lives of millions of Americans, or fighting a losing war against our adversaries to preserve Taiwan independence or to preserve the Baltic states. Any one of these ways, you know, using the first chapter you mentioned on weather, for example, I mean, makes the case, which has never been made before, and it's pretty obvious observation, actually, that an adversary is probably going to exploit and launch a blackout warfare during bad weather. During an ice storm, during a hurricane, during a heat wave, something that puts stress on the electric grid, because the electric grid by Mother Nature can be pushed to near collapse by these phenomena. And it's the perfect time to launch a combination of cyber attacks and physical sabotage, non-nuclear EMP attacks, and then the ultimate attack, the nuclear EMP attack, the high altitude nuclear EMP attack, you know, which is better than all the others combined. But any one of them could be used to destroy the electric grid, collapse the electric grid. just the way the German Blitzkrieg, you know, the advantage of massed tank armies and the way they operated, or mobile infantry, or their superior air power, any one of those elements would have been sufficient for them to defeat an adversary in World War II. But putting them in combination, it makes it irresistible. And that's what the adversary plans to do, to use all these axes of attack in combination to basically overwhelm us and win World War III, literally without firing a shot. You know, except perhaps shots by special forces guys shooting at transformers. As an example, in that chapter, the Electric Grid's Dirty Little Secret, it points out that, you know, a very small team, a terrorist army of perhaps 20 to 40 men, you know, if they used high-powered rifles or rocket-propelled grenade launchers, you know, they took out 9 key transformers out of 2,000. That would be enough to cause the electric grid to collapse and result in a nationwide blackout that could last more than a year. So this book is important to read, not just for the information of your listeners, but I hope that they will, as people who care about civil defense, become activists, become warriors on behalf of our country to mobilize our political leaders to do something. You know, one of the things I would recommend them to do is, you know, after reading the book, you know, to send emails, make phone calls. The ideal thing, you know, would be to actually send a copy of the book to your governor, to your state representative, to your senator, your congressman, to the White House. We were talking before the show about how does the White House decide how to do things in terms of responding to the public affairs. And you can send them an email, the thing, and that matters. The White House does count. And this is true for any congressman or member of the Senate. You know, they will count the number of emails they get on an issue to decide if they're going to take action. They give greater weight to a letter. If you actually write a letter, that gets greater weight and gives it more consideration. Imagine the weight it would result in an even greater weight being given to things if they actually received books, you know, from the American people. You know, I'll bet if the White House got 5 books from people from different states, you know, that would probably count for the equivalent of 1,000 emails in terms of the impact it would have. It would capture the attention of at least the White House staff, who knows, maybe even reach the president. But by doing that, by being an activist, you know, sending emails, making phone calls, sending a letter, the best thing to do would be to actually send them a copy of the book. It's a way for you to have disproportionate impact and get attention for this issue that would upon which the existence of our civilization depends. Mm-hmm. You know, you would be saving not only in your own life, but that of your grandchildren, and giving us a fighting chance to save the free world, you know, which is imperiled. It's never been. I've been in the national security area all my professional life, and I've never seen us so threatened, not just from enemies without, but from enemies within. In Yes. order to turn the tide of totalitarianism that is rising from outside and inside, though, we have to survive. The American people have to be kept alive. And we can't allow our adversaries an easy way of conquering us, you know. And this is such an easy way of conquering the country that it may be becoming irresistible to them. I mean, witness what has happened in just this past year with the Colonial Pipeline being hacked. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're actually transitioning from merely stealing information to actually monkeying around and closing down our critical infrastructures. This isn't an accident. They're gauging our responses. And this weak Biden administration has done nothing. You know, there was no, despite, they always make loud noises. Oh, they're not going to get away with that. You know, we're going to retaliate. There's never any retaliation. And by the way, when presidents, even President Trump discovered this, when they threaten that, well, we're going to deter them because we're going to retaliate, you know, then they go and see, well, how can we retaliate? You know, the fact of the matter is Russia, China, North Korea, the bad guys, have hardened their critical infrastructures already. It's much harder for us to make cyber attacks against them than it is for them to do cyber warfare against us.
And they all
design their critical.
And they all have robust civil defense structures too, tunnels and bunkers and food stored and things like that. They can protect their people. We don't. Ours are left to fend for themselves, except for the fat bureaucrats who get to go to a secret location up in the mountains, like I used to have.
Right. There's nuclear blast out and blast doors on subways in Moscow. Hundreds of deep underground facilities for protecting the military political leaders, bunkers for the civilian population. They did an exercise a couple of years ago where they actually mobilized 20 million of their civilians who participated in a civil defense drill, you know, to survive a nuclear war. The first thing they do when they build their electric grids and communication systems, because they're totalitarian states and they're so paranoid, the first thing they think of is national security. Mm-hmm. And so they build the hardness right into those systems when they're first built. This is why there's a lot of electromechanical devices still in Russia's electric grid, which aren't vulnerable to cyber and are much more resistant to EMP, about a million times more vacuum tube type technologies that are literally a million times less vulnerable to EMP than our modern microelectronic stuff. In contrast, all of our critical infrastructures are owned and run by private sector corporations whose only motive is the profit motive, you know? And they're going to do things as cheaply and as expensively and be as resistant as possible to government regulation. And so even though they, for 20 years, have been telling the government, don't worry, you know, we're acting, we're protecting against these things, against cyber, against EMP, against physical sabotage. Then an ice storm hits Texas, or a heat wave hits California, and high winds blow down towers and cause wildfires everywhere. And it shows that these guys aren't even prepared to cope with unusual weather conditions like an ice storm or routine weather conditions like high winds that happen all the time in California that can knock down 100-year-old power line towers and cause forest fires and killed hundreds of people and cause billions of dollars worth of damage. And in effect, they get away with violating their own and FERC regulations. They're so inept. It was never realistic to expect these guys to pick up the burden of national security against such sophisticated threats as a blackout warfare using combined EMP and cyber and physical sabotage. That's not going to happen. You know, they're right that it's not their job. It's the job of the federal government. It's right in the Constitution to provide for the common defense. And the government is the one that has the expertise, or they used to have the expertise.
Yes, and they should have the Department of Defense.
Yeah, the Department of Defense or the Department of Homeland Security needs to get in there and actually do the things that are necessary. Do it for them. You know, there are defense contractors who have been working with the Department of Defense on EMP protection of military systems for decades, you know, that should be hired by these utilities to go in there and fix the problem.
But yes.
Until the government does its job, it's not going to get done.
Yes. And that's going to have to be the last word. Dr. Pry, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook and Telegram. I really love Telegram. I post a lot there. And MeWe. And then most of the items we post are important information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation, and I don't have a chance to talk about on the radio show. However, when I find something funny, I'll post that as well. So please consider this information and use it wisely. I wish to thank our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, again for his participation in today's show, and to thank you our friends and listeners out there who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.